Welcome to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and your host is psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson. And Dad, today we're joined again by Dr. Michael Ferris from Patrick Henry College to continue our conversation about Patrick Henry and homeschooling.
Ryan, I loved that interview with Dr. Ferris yesterday. Mm-hmm. He is so knowledgeable of the homeschools movement, and of course he's chancellor of Patrick Henry College, and there was so much to talk about there that when we came to the end of the program, we announced that we were going to have him as our guest again, and he's back with us. And let me just give his introduction. In addition to the things I just mentioned, he's married to Vicky. They have 10 children. Oof. And he is a constitutional lawyer and a very, very bright man. And he's on the phone with us now. Well, Dr. Ferris, we were talking with you last time about two subjects that I want to expand on today. One is the homeschools movement, which I thoroughly believe in. I also believe in the college that you founded and are now chancellor of, Patrick Henry College. Let's talk about the school first. I said last time that I've spoken there, I've met the faculty, I've met the kids, I've toured, and there are wonderful things taking place there. It is a Christian college that is true to the things that we believe. And the architecture of the campus, and it's not large, but the architecture looks like a founding father would walk out of the front door. Patrick Henry College is only 50 miles from Washington, D.C., which gives the possibility of your students being interns and getting jobs in the nation's capital.
Yes, we're in the western suburbs of Washington, D.C. Our students get wonderful internship opportunities on Capitol Hill, working both for members of Congress and the various organizations like the Heritage Foundation and Concerned Women for America and Family Research Council. Many other groups have hired our interns. In fact, when I go run around with people who run these organizations in D.C., the number one request of me is, can I get some more interns?
Michael, why are the homeschool families so interested in Patrick Henry? What is it about your institution that homeschoolers are saying, that's where I want to go, that's where I want to end up?
Well, while it's dominated by homeschoolers, I do want to make it clear that anybody that loves Jesus and is smart and wants to help lead the country, we welcome them as well.
Well, of course.
But we love the homeschool connection, but I just wanted to put a little bit of a plug in for others as well. But the reason that parents and homeschooling parents in particular are interested in Patrick Henry College is parents don't want to spend $100,000 for college and have their kids come out and not share their values. Mm-hmm. That's one of the big reasons. And, we stand strong in the Word of God. We stand strong on the inerrancy of Scripture. We integrate Christian worldview at a deep level in everything that we do. And so we're not an indoctrination center, but we're a center that has no apology about what's true. And we stand up for what's true, and we're clear about what's true. The students are still free moral beings, and they could, in theory, reject. And I guess probably in our 12-year history, there have been one or two students that have not come out the way we'd want. But the vast, vast majority come in just as strong or stronger. They exit the school with the same kind of values as they entered it. And parents want that assurance. Then it's academically excellent. I mean, we challenge kids. I relate most of the students who go to law school because of what I teach and the way I coach the moot court team. And they say, yeah, we're thoroughly prepared for law school. They feel like they've already had like a year of law school in terms of preparation the day they walk in the door, because we challenge them and we make them work hard. Much of what we do at Patrick Henry really is more at a graduate school level in terms of its intensity and its rigor. And so if you want a rigorous education that is faithful to the founders of this country and faithful to the Word of God, we'd certainly like any student, any parent, to take a look at Patrick Henry College.
I'm really interested in why homeschoolers choose that form of education for their kids, because it's not an easy road. It's not easy to have your kids throughout the day and to do all that mothers and fathers have to do to make this successful. But I saw a study in preparation for this program done by Dr. Brian Ray. He's the president of the National Home Education Research Institute. And they polled, 7,306 participants and asked them why they homeschool. And their responses were as follows. Number one, 79.5% believed that they could give their child a better education at home. And number two, 73.5% said that they wanted to teach their children particular values and beliefs. And thirdly, 69.2% wanted to develop character and morality. Those are pretty good reasons to do that, aren't they?
They really are. And the character, morality, and the values questions remind me of an incident where I took the deposition of a superintendent of schools in Pennsylvania in a homeschooling case some time ago. And one of the criteria that the district was trying to impose on the homeschoolers was to require them to teach drug education like the public schools did. So I asked them to describe what the public school drug education program was like and said, can you tell students, for example, that it's immoral to use drugs like heroin and other hard drugs like that? He says, no, we could never say that anything was morally wrong. All we can do is tell students, here are the physical consequences of using these drugs, and then let them make the choice of whether they want to do it or not. That kind of moral confusion is what people are seeking to avoid, and that's why they want to homeschool their kids, so that they can be clear about what's right and what's wrong, not only in drug use, but in sexual behavior, in basic areas of life where people actually believe there are things that are right and there are things that are wrong, and they don't want any uncertainty about those basic concepts.
I'm so glad you brought that example up, because throughout high school, I went to public school for a portion of my high schooling years, and every year they would have a big presentation on don't drink and drive. They'd have people come, they would bring cars that had been wrecked in drunk driving accidents, and they would say, we have a big pledge that students are going to sign that they won't drink and drive. And every time I heard a presentation like that, I would think to myself, aren't we all underage? Are you really telling an entire auditorium of underage high school students, we know you're going to drink, just please tell us you won't drink and drive? And then I went to a couple of Christian schools, and they'd have presentations on don't drink and drive at a school where every student had signed a commitment that they wouldn't be drinking while enrolled in that university. And it just seemed to be such a contradiction to what we're teaching. You're underage. You shouldn't be drinking. It's against the law. Don't drink. Not the, well, it's the same thing with sex education. Well, we know your kids are going to have sex. There's no way to stop you from this. So we're going to give you a little, try to wear protection, because while the Center for Disease Control knows it won't stop transmission of diseases.
Yeah, it's okay as long as you do it in a safe manner.
And, it's just crazy.
The word morality, it has no place in many public school classrooms. And yet some things are not only not beneficial, but they are morally wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. I did a homeschool case just this year, and I was cross-examining a school principal. And we were talking about character development. And asked him, can you teach actual morals? And he said, no, we really can't. And the guy seemed like a really nice guy and a really decent guy. And I think that it pained him that he was painted into that corner.
Mm.
And so there are a lot of really good people in that system. My dad's a retired public school principal, but just the ethos and the law has worked together to hamstring the people who would say, yes, there are moral values that we need to convey here. Well, they would like to be clear about it, and they feel hamstrung. But in the homeschooling world, there's no hamstringing.
Right.
The parents are free to tell their kids, this is right and this is wrong, while they are also free to do things like teach phonics. One of the basic reasons that homeschoolers do so well academically is we don't walk away embarrassed about teaching phonics. In English, letters make sounds. If you're trying to teach Chinese, letters don't make sounds. You don't want to use phonics if you're trying to teach Chinese reading. But because our nation is fixated, the education establishment at least, is fixated on one-size-fits-all approach to education, they say, well, only about 85 or 90% of the kids can learn from phonics, so let's adopt a different kind of teaching of reading so that 100% of the kids can read. And what they do is they create a program that cripples a whole bunch of kids in chasing this one-size-fits-all theory. Homeschooling doesn't have to be one-size-fits-all. Most kids are taught with phonics, and the few kids that have learning disabilities where that's difficult, you adapt and you teach those kids a little differently. Mm-hmm. And that's how it should work. When education is individualized, it flourishes, and kids can, you know, have their strengths strengthened and their weaknesses overcome, and you really can maximize a child's potential when you approach education individually.
Well, obviously, you're talking to two people that totally agree with everything you're saying. I also know that there are listeners that when we talk about homeschooling and the benefits of homeschooling, they are immediately shutting down. They're saying, you know, we just can't do it. We can't do it. It's too expensive. It's too hard. I'm not qualified. There are all those things, those basic roadblocks. The first ones that come up, is it really that expensive?
Well, it's expensive only in an indirect sense. Usually, mom isn't working outside the home. Mm-hmm. And so if you're willing to make that kind of a lifestyle sacrifice so that you're going to live basically on one income, in the vast majority of cases, that's what happens in the homeschooling world. So that's the expense, is that you're giving up that second job. The actual cost of homeschooling is a few hundred dollars a year per child. It's not very much money.
So what about the mom that's listening that says, you know, I've got kids in high school. I don't know trigonometry. I don't know these things. How am I going to teach my child things that maybe I don't even know? I don't feel qualified to home educate my child.
Well, it's curious. Over the years, I've had a lot of moms who have an 8-year-old asking me the trigonometry question. And the first thing I tell them is, you don't teach trigonometry until much later. So wait on that one. The studies show that parents with a high school diploma, their kids do virtually the same as parents who have a college degree. And both groups of kids that are homeschooled, no matter what the parent background is, they do around 30 percentile points higher than the public school kids on average. So if you take kids of high school educated parents in public schools, their scores, they are affected by the form of public education for some reason. It's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. They say, oh, your parents aren't professionals. We're going to give you second-rate education. And kids live up to that expectation. But in homeschooling, parents' education background does not matter in a statistically meaningful way on educational outcomes. Now, when you get to the high school level and you got a mom that doesn't know trigonometry, what you do is you do a co-op class, mm-hmm. or you send your kid to the community college, or you enroll in one class in the public school if they let you, or you enroll in one class at a Christian school if they let you, or you take an online course. There are 100 different workarounds for particular specialized courses at the high school level where mom and dad still teach the core courses, and there's a lot of co-ops that are going on. You know, my three youngest sons have all benefited from taking co-op science classes from a man in my church who has a PhD in physics and is a government physicist. And he's taught them chemistry and physics and astronomy. And, you know, I'm not really qualified to teach those things. I could struggle through it probably. But there was a co-op class. And so they went to the co-op class. And that was great. And that was the one class that we didn't teach them.
Yeah.
And it was a great experience. And those things are available throughout the nation for homeschool kids.
And in fact, Ryan, your precious little boy, Lincoln, my grandson,
getting bigger every day,
is being homeschooled. And you guys are in a co-op. You are getting help with aspects, even though he's only 7 years old now. But you don't have to do it all.
That's right. We are members of a co-op. So there's some subjects they teach. There's some that we teach at home. And I got to be honest, what we've found, there are a lot of really, really, really smart people out there that work cheap. we've got a girl that comes in that's got a degree in chemical engineering, and she's doing some science stuff with Lincoln. She also speaks three languages, so she does rudimentary language skills with him. He's learned some Russian. He's learned some other things like that. And it is shockingly inexpensive, but this girl graduated college. She's got a degree. She's got school loans. The job market is down and has said to us, hey, what subject do you want me to teach? You know, I have experience in all of these different things, and it's a joy to have her in our house. We love it.
You know, if some of our listeners are thinking that we're bashing public schools, I would like to remind everybody that I used to be a public school teacher.
So was Mom.
Right. Yeah, both of us. I taught science and math in junior high and was a high school counselor, so I'm very much a part of the public school system, but it has changed a whole lot since I was 24, 25, 26 years of age. And we really have to keep an eye on what our kids are being taught. You know, you would not submit your children to somebody whose values are totally different from your own. And I certainly wouldn't. And if I were in a district or a city where bad things were going on in school, I got to tell you, I'd get them out of there. I don't know how we would do it. I love Christian schools too. And each parent has to make their own choices about this. But it is really something that ought to include more than the academics. It's got to include character and morality.
It does. That's right. And Dr. Ferris, there's been so many studies about the way boys learn and traditional schooling in a classroom at a desk sitting still. Can you talk a little bit about the disadvantage boys have in school? Because that's going to affect our society as a whole if we're trying to force them into a situation where it's really harder for them to learn like that.
My dad is a retired elementary principal with a specialty in reading. And he used to tell me that little boys mature more slowly than little girls, and that they need to reach an integrated maturity level of about 6 years old, where body, soul, spirit all comes together at the same time, and their mind's ready, and they're ready to read. And when you get a kid that has that integrated maturity level, they will be ready to read and will be great readers. Unfortunately, little boys do that a year or two later than little girls in many cases. And what happens is when you force a kid to sit in a desk for 6 hours a day, or 8 hours in some cases, when he's not ready to learn, you're frustrating him and you're leading him into believing that this is something I can't be successful at. And you start them off on a path where they are, you know, they think they're dumb, they think they're slow, they think there's something wrong with them. It is a self-fulfilling prophecy. If that little boy was in a homeschooling setting where parents understood, you know, this developmental issue, and they think, okay, it'll be okay. You know, if they're six, if they're seven, if they're eight, it'll be okay. It's going to work out. And they're not pressuring the boy to succeed on a time frame. You're going to have a more happy, more successful, and a little boy that believes that he can be successful in education. And the predictive value of that, of believing based on good results, based on hard work, that you can be successful in education is really critical.
You know, Mike, boys may catch up with girls in certain aspects of development a couple of years later, but boys will never be girls. And girls will never be boys, and they learn differently, and their physiology is different. And boys, I think, get shortchanged frequently in public schools because they're forced to learn the way girls do, and they don't hold still easily. Ryan, you once told me that when you were in the first or second grade, you were thinking, if they just let me stand, I'd be okay.
Right.
But you couldn't. You had to stay in your seat. Well, you weren't developmentally geared for that,
believe me. Yeah, it was really hard. I have to be honest, it was very, very difficult. And that's one of the primary reasons why we started homeschooling our son Lincoln. He needs to be outdoors. When we do math, yes, we do normal math, you know, in a book on pages, and we do addition, subtraction, things like that. And he and I go outside with a tape measure and we build things and we do math that way, and we play Monopoly and we do math that way. And he loves books, and he wants to read so bad. And so we're working on that with him now, and he's getting it, and he enjoys it, and he's loving learning. And that's what I'm most happy about as a parent, that my kid likes to learn.
He's one bright kid, I'll tell you that. Yeah. It's scary.
It is.
Well, Michael, you have really given your professional life, even as an attorney, to this issue of education. And you lived it out at home, and I think it's a wonderful thing. And let me just say again, for those who weren't with us at the beginning of the program, that Patrick Henry College is not the only Christian college out there that's doing a good job, but this is one of them. And I have told you, I don't endorse very many things because my board will not allow me. But your school is one that I believe in, having seen it up close and personal.
Well, we really appreciate your partnership with us at Patrick Henry in so many ways, and we hope that that grows, and we have big plans for that down the road. But, you know, again, as I think I said on the last program, we consider Patrick Henry College as part of your legacy. Patrick Henry was grown out of the homeschooling movement, and you helped launch the homeschooling movement. My wife heard your program back in around 1980 and decided that we were going to homeschool after listening to you and Dr. Raymond Moore. And so most of the pioneer homeschoolers of my age say the same thing. That's how they got started. You really launched us. And so, you know, we're just really grateful that your legacy has broader implications than you would have ever imagined, because God has poured out his blessing through you to millions and millions of people. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I think we've got time left for me to tell that story, because I love it. It really takes me back to the very beginning of my radio experience. And I attended USC, and one of the students there who was a little older than me was also majoring in child development, as I was, in graduate school, and he got his doctorate there. And I heard about Ray Moore, and I didn't know him. I didn't know what he stood for, but I thought it'd be interesting. Then somebody gave me a book called Better Late Than Early, and said, you really need to read this. And so I got it, and I realized there's a lot there that I could learn. So I invited Dr. Moore to come be my guest. I had no idea what was about to happen, because we were inundated. I mean, I can't remember the numbers. It may have been 40 or 50,000 letters and calls that we got as a result of that broadcast. And so I began having Dr. Moore on fairly regularly, and it really was, I don't mean this in a self-serving way, but it really was the beginning of the modern homeschools movement. If you go back to the 1800s or before, all schooling was homeschooled. And that's where these founding fathers came from. They came out of homeschooling education. It's the reason is because kids were being taught to read the Bible there. And now we've come back to it in a very small way, and I want to see it grow.
Well, we appreciate that leadership, and it's the reason that Homeschool Legal Defense Association gave you a Lifetime Achievement Award a couple, 3 years ago, because you have contributed in a big way to families in this country, you know, in so many areas, but homeschooling is one of them, where you just opened people's eyes and said, you know, just take a look at it. You were not saying this is the only way to do things, but just by opening that opportunity and using your voice to let us know about it, it really changed America in a big way. We're grateful for your work.
Well, give your wife, Vicki, our regards, and also Dr. Graham Walker, who is the president of Patrick Henry College. I've got a lot of friends there. It's been a pleasure having you on these 2 days, and we will do it again.
Thank you so much, Dr. Dobson, and Ryan, it's great to always be with you.
Appreciate you. For more information on homeschooling and our good friends at Patrick Henry College, head on over to drjamesdobson.org. I know you've heard us say that Family Talk is listener supported, but I'm not sure if you know what Family Talk does outside of our radio ministry. Family Talk creates resources every day to help strengthen marriages and to give tools to parents who are trying to raise kids in this crazy world that we live in. Our call center prays with people in need and helps find the right resources for their issues. And we invite you to financially partner with Family Talk on our website, drjamesdobson.org, our Facebook page, our smartphone app, or when you call us, 877-732-6825. Again, 877-732-6825. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.
I want to thank you for helping Family Talk end the year strong. And know that however God leads you to give by December 31st, the impact will be doubled thanks to the matching challenge. We count it a privilege to walk alongside friends like you because you make Family Talk possible. Thank you for sharing your year in gift by December 31st. The matching challenge doubles its impact. So please give when you call us at 877-732-6825. One last time, 877-732-6825.